I'm Rick McInnes-Ray. You're listening to the podcast version of CBC Radio's Dispatches, available every Thursday at midday from our website, cbc.ca/dispatches, or cbc.ca/podcasting, where you'll find hundreds of hours of the CBC's best programs. You can also follow us on Twitter, at CBC Dispatches. Now.
По синему морю, в зеленой земле.
This is Andre, a black kid in a foster home in Ukraine, singing about the mother he doesn't know. One day he'll be brutally assaulted because she wasn't there. But for now, he sings, I'm sailing to my mom on a white tall ship. She'll come and find me. In this world, there are no abandoned children. But in the real world, there are. Andre is just one of them. Being a foster child in Ukraine has its challenges. Black ones face even more. It's the subject of a new film, Family Portrait in Black and White, the only feature-length Canadian documentary selected for the recent Sundance Festival. It turns on the heartwarming, if headstrong, Olga Nenya, who's looked after 25 foster children in all, 16 of them mixed race. The film was written and directed by Russian-born Julia Ivanova, and she joins me from Vancouver. Welcome to Dispatches.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure for me, too.
Tell me about Olga, the woman at the center of this film. She's fostered over 20 kids over the years, 16 of whom are mixed race. What motivates her?
There are many reasons, and in the film, she doesn't give the answer. I asked her about 12, 15 times, why you do it? And I think she didn't want to say because there are many reasons. I think the main reason is she really wants to help these children to have a family because she feels it is extremely unfair for the children who are mixed race to be raised in the orphanages. And that's where most of them are raised because most of them are left at birth by their birth mothers who are Ukrainian. The parents of these children are African students. Mostly they come to Ukraine to study medicine and engineering, and they have a romantic relationship with local girls. And when the child is born, there is a dilemma, right? So Olga doesn't put blame on these women because to keep the child, you need to be a very strong person because basically for the rest of your life, every passerby can point a finger at you and call you a whore. And it actually happens. And I use this word, which is not very soft, pleasant word, but that's the reality they live with. So they leave the children in the orphanages.
The challenges confronting foster kids are significant enough, but you seem to suggest that they are amplified for being in Ukraine. At one point in the film, Olga says, I've committed a terrible crime. I'm raising children no one wants. In our country, that's a crime. What is she saying about Ukraine?
She says this after her household was checked by the team of inspectors, so she was very upset. So, of course, it's not a crime to raise orphans or to raise mixed race orphans. So it's not a crime. But what she means is that these wonderful children, beautiful children, smart, interesting, alive, nobody would ever adopt them in Ukraine.
You offer sort of a range of what I'd consider racism in their lives in your film, from neighbors who just don't like them to, well, I'll ask you, tell me about the range that you discovered while you were making it.
Olga Nenya, the foster mother, she's raising 16 mixed-race orphans in a village. So because it's a small village, the children don't experience that much racism in their life. And because she was very smart and she has a gang of children, like they're huge, they are not a minority. So they don't feel themselves as if they're victims or outcasts. So that was a great idea that she moved to the village. In general, these children, mixed race children, black children in Ukraine, they experience racism like on a different scale. One scale, one thing would be like every day. Can I say bad words on radio? I don't know. But every day they hear nigger and black ass. And it is not even that somebody has intentions to hurt them. It's just how people call them. Another thing would be, of course, when they start to date. That's a huge thing, because the parents of the other side would oppose to that, and you understand why. And the third thing is physical threat. Physical threat comes later in life, and skinheads unfortunately exist in Ukraine. So I think that for these children, the racism is an everyday reality.
It is harsh language, but it is the life that they live with. But I'm thinking, the teenager named Sashka, one of the kids closest to Olga, says he plans to leave Ukraine someday because of the racism just being too hard to take, but he didn't always feel that way. What pushed him over the edge?
In the film, Sashka, Olga's favorite, he is a true Ukrainian guy, boy. The way he speaks Ukrainian, unfortunately, because it's through subtitles how you understand what he says, but his language is amazingly local Ukrainian, and his mentality. So we start when he is 13. The first year, he tries to blend in, and he tries so hard. And he even uses the same racist language when he talks about Middle Eastern students, or he calls black students some bad words because he wants to distance himself. 2 years later, he realizes it's impossible because he looks black, and it doesn't matter how he sounds. So though Sashka is not the smartest boy in the family, but definitely even he could understand that for him to be a normally accepted citizen and equal, he unfortunately would have to leave Ukraine. And he loves Ukraine. And I think it's a huge shame for the country that these children who wouldn't mind staying in Ukraine and contributing would want to leave, because nobody wants to feel as a second-class citizen.
In a family, you know, as large as the one profiled in your film, there is this range of personalities, leaders, followers, but also people in the process of being damaged, like the hyperactive young Andre, consigned to a special needs boarding school, even though his own teacher says he doesn't have a learning disability, she can tell. What are you saying about Ukraine's education system?
Ukraine's education system is a good one. It has some shortcomings that come from the Soviet times, and the worst shortcoming is the way the system deals with children with learning disabilities. Andrei, who is a boy who was taken by Olga when he was just 1 year old, he doesn't have a learning disability. I personally believe he is dyslexic. But dyslexia was never treated and considered by Soviet system as a separate just state of mind or ability. It was considered just a disability, like mental sort of retardation in a way. In Ukraine, children that cannot keep up with the pace with other children of studying, they study at special schools. And for some children, it's a good place. For him, it's a very bad place, because I believe he's very smart. And he is the only black child in the whole school, so you can imagine how much he is called bad names.
But the poor little guy eventually serves a spell in a psychiatric ward where he claims he was wrapped up in wet bed sheets as punishment for acting up. What do you think of the way kids are served by the psychiatric system?
I hope that this film will be shown in different countries, and it will bring attention to this issue, that at the psychiatric hospital, at this particular one, where this particular child was, the nurses do torture their children. And he didn't tell me everything. I asked him what was on his head, because his mother, foster mother, told me that he had scars and blood when she took him. The worst thing is that after several years of such treatment, as they call it, treatment, Andrei, a beautiful, wonderful, smart boy, he's broken, he's damaged, and I don't think his future is bright.
Damaged is the word I think of, too. I think to a 14-year-old Roman, one of Olga's foster kids, with a difference, though. He knows who his father is, right? A Ugandan who says he wants to claim his son, but is powerless to do so. Do you believe him, or is he highlighting what might be a wider documentation problem for foreign-born parents of kids in Ukraine?
Rick, I appreciate that you noticed that there could be some doubts. Of course, I interviewed Roman's father, only once, so I wouldn't be able to say for sure whether I can trust him or not. But the fact that he at first appeared and he gave hope to this orphan that he wouldn't be an orphan anymore. And then the father wasn't able to prove his paternity and he left and he disappeared for more than half a year. And Roman was suffering incredibly. It was after we filmed, but it was a huge wound because he trusted his father. So I personally believe that Roman shouldn't go with his father to Uganda, first of all, because I don't trust this man, and secondly, because in Uganda he also would be an outcast because he is not Ugandan and he is mentally very Ukrainian. In terms of paternity, this story was a complex one because Roman's father was not on the birth certificate. As a foreigner, he had to go to court, and the court has different rates for foreign citizens and for Ukrainian citizens. For Roman's father to prove his paternity would cost $5,000, and it was something that he could never afford.
I wasn't aware, you know, till I saw your film, that ever since Chernobyl, some charities have been helping Ukrainian kids to holiday with local families in Europe. And out of Olga's brood, seven of them spent several summers in Italy or France. What is the value of that experience in your view?
I am a great advocate of the international adoption. So I think that the fact that these children from a small Ukrainian village have an opportunity to go to Italy and France year after year, summer after summer, Christmas after Christmas, it really shapes their personality in a different way. They have this duality in them that allows them to see the world in a more complex way than their foster mother can. And unfortunately, it creates clashes with Olga, their foster mother, who never left Ukraine, never traveled abroad, but they did.
Olga has an odd reaction, doesn't she? She thinks of the European host of those kids as strangers with good hearts, which seems a bit dismissive, short-sighted even. Why do you think she says that?
I think that she is quite manipulative on many levels. So she uses the European host families to her advantage, to their family's advantage. So she feels that these are her children. And she has no intention to share them with anybody in terms of emotional or legal state, right?
All right.
So what she does is she dismisses them, but that's the only way she can deal with them. But she needs them. When they had their refrigerator blown, the Italian family gave money for her to buy a refrigerator. So there is nothing excessive but the necessities. What is interesting is children, even when they're small, they sense that they need to hide from Olga the fact that they're emotionally attached to their host families in Italy and in France. And as soon as they land back in Ukraine, they stop mentioning them.
Olga has many flaws, as we all do, and you can forgive her many of them, but can you personally forgive her for holding those kids back from adoption?
I personally can forgive her everything except holding these kids close to herself and not allowing them to be adopted, because I think she robs them of their future, of the possibility of having a good future. I think in Ukraine the chances that a black orphan would have a good future are extremely small.
When the teenager Kirill bristles against Olga's authority, she cuts him off as her foster son and gives up the role and starts talking about these being hard times, the time of perestroika in Ukraine, which refers to the momentous reforms in Russia during the 80s. But what does that moment reveal to you about her generation in Ukraine now?
The clash between Olga and her foster son Kirill is a clash of generations. And clash of generations happens in any family. But in their case, this clash is much stronger because she grew up and lived all her life through the Soviet times. And Kirill is a stubborn, smart, opinionated boy who grew up during the time of change to capitalism. Olga is a very intelligent woman, though she doesn't have an education, but she's extremely intelligent. And she says that now it is all about individual freedom, and she doesn't like it. So the problem is, it cannot be solved.
Individual freedom wasn't a facet of her life growing up, and still isn't.
No, it was not. Olga had an authoritarian mother herself. She was doing what she was supposed to do in her life, and she believes that every child should be the same way as she used to be.
Thank you for telling me about her. Thank you for making the film.
Thank you.
Director Julia Ivanova in Vancouver. The documentary is called Family Portrait in Black and White, and it'll be showing at the Hot Docs Film Festival in Toronto, May 2nd, 4th, and 8th. If that story or any of the others on the program reminds you of one of yours, email dispatches@cbc.ca and share it with the rest of us.